Matt, we can hear you laugh.
Yeah.
Oh, shit.
That's producer Matt, everybody.
That was funny.
It's good. No, it's good to hear laugh.
No, the funny thing is, that's the first time he's laughed in the whole 40 minutes we've been recording. So.
From Topic Studios and WarnerMedia Podcast Network, this is Politically Reactive. I'm W. Kamau Bell.
And I'm Hari Kundabolu, a.k.a. the Johnny Appleseed of comedy. I plant a joke seed, and several years later, you finally get it and laugh.
I can't wait to get that one. We're two friends and stand-up comics and dads trying to make sense of American politics.
And every week, we fail to do so. Because it seems impossible, because it doesn't make sense. It's not supposed to make sense.
And this week, we have an absolute unqualified legend on the show. Poet Nikki Giovanni. Ms. Giovanni came up in the civil rights era and the Black Power movements of the 1960s, and she continues to tap into the energy of today's liberation movements.
I think of the whole planet as, what do the girls say? Mm. And now the girls are saying, Black lives matter.
Nikki Giovanni is the author of more than 24 books, poetry, essays, and stories for children, including her new collection, Make Me Rain.
And when you write that much over that long a period of time, it can be a little strange. Like when people start talking to you about poems you wrote 50 years ago.
I just found this poem in this book, and you know, you were 25 years old, and I'm thinking, and you what? Blow your nose on it.
We talk with Nikki Giovanni about the politics of this country and this planet, but also her fascination with the idea of traveling out into the universe.
Send me into space, and when that moment comes, open the door, and I'll just be a star.
It's all coming up on Politically Reactive. And this is Black History Month. It's the Black History Month spectacular for Politically Reactive. Blackity, 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 blackity.
Wait, since you're one of the hosts, isn't every single episode a celebration of Black history? Because you're old.
Can't wait to get that joke either. Hey, Hari.
Hello, Kamau. How are you?
I'm fine.
Where are you now? Where in this country are you?
I am in Dallas, Texas, taping an episode of United Shades of America, the last episode of the season. So I thought I would go out in a place that is mask optional.
How bad is it? Like, have you walked around and have you seen tons of people, like groups of people not wearing masks?
So first of all, let's be clear, in Dallas, Texas, let me just put it this way. The people not wearing masks in Dallas, it's a diverse group of people. There's no, like, one group. It's not just the Trumpers. It's not just the black people who thinks it's a whatever. It is everybody.
Diverse delinquency.
And it's also weird things like this. You will see a family, like a mom and a dad and a couple kids, and, like, one parent will have a mask on and one parent won't. Like, do you think you're fighting 50% of the virus that way? Like, it's just like, do you only have one mask and you guys do like rock, paper, scissors when you leave the house?
It's like, I want to die, but I don't want you to die.
Yeah, honey, you shouldn't have to die.
Funny. It's almost like a decision like, I don't want to wear a mask. But we have to make sure that we cover all our bases in case I'm wrong. So you wear a mask so the kids have a parent.
Just in case this thing is real, one of us should wear a mask. Oh, boy.
I walked out of my apartment to run an errand, and I don't know, something fell off, and I'm halfway down the street, and I'm like, oh, my God, I don't have a mask.
Yeah.
And it was terrifying. And it was funny because I'm like, oh, not that long ago, if I saw somebody with a mask, I'm like, where the hell does that guy have a mask?
Yeah.
And now I was that freak without a mask. I'm like, oh, my God, this is horrible.
What'd you do?
My bare mouth is showing. Children are going to run from me. I'm a freak. What are those, mommy and daddy? Those are lips, son.
Did you go back or did you run your errand?
Oh, I ran back. Are you kidding me? I'm also scared of dying and not just killing other people. So,
yeah,
I quickly went back and it was so ridiculous. Like, I was doing desperate things. Like, I took my T-shirt up and covered my mouth.
Yep.
Like, I covered my mouth with my T-shirt. Like, I was really desperate. Like, no one can see my face. And people were passing by me on the street. And it was not a good feeling.
Then you think they're judging you like, oh.
Oh, yeah. Like, oh, this guy, he doesn't give a shit.
Yeah.
Why don't you go to Dallas?
Where you will be in plenty of company. Mask optional. What's going on with you?
Well, it's that time of the year when I take a week to decide whether I'm going to watch the Super Bowl or not. Now, in the past, of course I watched the Super Bowl. I like American sport. I like to see...
okay, Mitt Romney.
And I, you know, enjoyed watching the commercials and seeing what advertising companies and capitalism and all that. And see, like, oh, this is the new crop of brainwashing tools.
It's a great way to check in with American capitalism, see where it's at, see what they think is trending right now.
It's like, oh, no, I love that Modest Mouse song. It's ruined now by this beer commercial.
Or you get to do things like, man, how did Charmin get George Clooney to do a commercial? Things like that.
God, I guess they made a lot of money off COVID, toilet paper money. So I have to decide because, you know, after what happened to Colin Kaepernick several years ago, the fact he's still hasn't signed.
It's still happening.
There was a time where there was like two or three guys named McCoy playing who were not good. There were like eight McCoys who were backup quarterbacks. He's good than, I will say this definitively, he's better than all McCoys. Without a doubt.
Yeah.
And so, you know, in protest, there was a year I did not watch
there the was Super the, Bowl. The, I mean, the NFL boycott, the first year that he wasn't let back in the league, it was like a thing, and it trended regularly, and black folks talked about it. And I have to admit that every year it has been there's been significantly less talk about it. Even in my high-level activist black circles that I'm in, it is not a thing I hear about as much anymore.
Can you tell Jocelyn that? Because last year, I felt really bad for watching because she made me really feel really bad for watching. Like I was stabbing Colin Kaepernick in the back.
Yeah,
I was betraying Colin Kaepernick because I wanted to watch American football. Mm-hmm. Also, you know, the concussion, CT, all that. You know, there's a lot of reasons not to support this thing. But I watched it. And so, again, I at that point, at the crossroads where I have to decide, do I want to see the Tampa Bay Buccaneers with 80-year-old Tom Brady go against the Kansas City Chiefs with 12-year-old Pat Mahomes? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do. I very much do want to watch that. But is it stabbing Colin Kaepernick in the back to do that? And you're telling me it is not.
No, that's not what I'm saying. That's actually not what I'm saying because I have more information for you. First of all, Tom Brady's younger than me, so fuck you. Okay, so, but the thing I am saying, let me add this into the mix. Like, the NBA has done a great job of keeping their workforce safe during COVID. The NFL has not done so good a job. They've had games that had to be postponed or pushed around because they aren't keeping their workforce safe of COVID. So there's that version. There's that part of it too. So the NFL.
Yeah, but to be fair, they've never been a big fan of worker safety, considering what the game is. It's consistent.
And it just so happens this Super Bowl, Patrick Mahomes, who's the NFL's Steph Curry, light-skinned black guy who does things nobody else has ever done in the sport before, but Tom Brady, Trumper.
Is he a Trumper? He had the hat. There's
I don't think he's like Storm the Capitol Trumper, but
That guy's my friend. I played golf with him, and I don't know anything about anything, but he's my friend.
He just gave me this hat, so he's never come out active. He's never come out to disavow his Trumpism.
Right.
So there's that. Patrick Mahomes, great guy, plays for a team called the Kansas City. What's that again?
Chiefs.
I'm sorry, I can't hear you. The what?
The Chiefs.
The Kansas City Chiefs.
And they home games at Arrowhead Stadium.
Yep. So you're not only are you going to stab Colin Kaepernick in the back, but you're basically storming the Capitol if you support Tom Brady. And you're turning your back on the entire indigenous community. But enjoy the game and the commercials.
Are you gonna watch?
I mean probably.
I mean, I'm a baseball and basketball guy, but I love sports so much. Yeah, and the Super Bowl, that's like the game I watch. That's like the big one. Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's the highest, usually the highest rated television broadcast. It's the game everybody watches, highest rated television broadcast of the year.
Yeah, and if something happens, I want to be able to talk about it next day by the water cooler, you know,
in your house.
It's actually just the sink, and with Joss, and she has no interest whatsoever in talking to me about football.
In other news, while you've been stressing about whether or not you're going to watch adult men throw around a leather ball to support American capitalism and turn your back on Colin Kaepernick, I have been totally obsessed with Marjorie Taylor Greene.
Yeah.
Initially, I want to talk about her because we talked about last week about Cori Bush. Cori Bush officially is moving her office in the Capitol to get away from Marjorie Taylor Greene.
You can do that?
Apparently. I didn't know. Yeah, it's funny to think that there's like, are there empty offices? Does she have to switch with somebody?
Is somebody like getting moved? What's her name? Lauren Boebert?
Yeah, maybe Lauren Boebert and Marjorie Taylor Greene can have adjoining offices. But yeah, so she's moving her office because Marjorie Taylor Greene, like the classless being she is, apparently harasses Cori Bush in the hallway like it's high school.
Yeah, that is not neighborly.
Yeah, it's not neighborly. It's not. It's also just like.
And she's racist, and yeah, she's a QAnon believer.
She's talked about the killing of Nancy Pelosi.
Yes,
Big one that is just like that lets you know. Okay, there's racist, there's anti-Semitic, and there's also like whoa. Apparently, on Facebook, talked about believing that Jewish people control the started the California wildfires in 2018 because they have lasers in the sky.
Wow. You know that old magazine that you'd see or newspaper you'd see on supermarket checkout lines? Like, was it News of the World? And it was like, aliens abduct David Schwimmer or whatever.
Yes. Yeah. That's probably a story they had. I mean, you just sort of pulled that out of the air. They had something that was very similar, I'm sure.
And she believes that.
Yeah.
That's her primary news source is basically stuff like that.
That's the problem, I guess, because News of the World doesn't really exist as a paper anymore, but it really, like, the internet sort of took that and blew it up, and really, maybe we should bring back News of the World so those people can focus on that newspaper instead of, like, you know, running for Congress. Yeah, so she's awful, and it's already the goalpost since January 6th. You'd think we'd still be like, oh my God, the Capitol was attacked that the president ordered. We've already moved the goalpost. Now they're just debating whether they should censure her, and I understand. On some level, are trying to debate whether they should censure her because they can't. They don't believe they can get the Republicans to vote on expelling her from Congress, which is just like, well, that's a problem.
Yeah.
If somebody can talk about Nancy Pelosi's death, if somebody can harass other Congress people, if somebody can believe that Jewish people have lasers in the sky that they used to start wildfires to make money, blah blah blah. If somebody can believe that Parkland was a false flag and say all this stuff,
Marjorie Taylor Greene is someone in other years. Would be forcibly removed from visiting a congressional office.
Exactly.
And now it's in fact her office. She has an office. She won an election.
Yeah. And to me, this is the remnants of Trump. Because Trump, you know, whatever, Trump is, I hope he gets impeached. I hope he can never run for office again. He gone, but he left behind a residue. Yeah. And some of that residue is sentient, like Lauren Boebert and Marjorie Taylor Greene. Sentient Trump residue is what
it's
they are.
It's a troll come to life.
Yeah, it's like the movie Ghostbusters when, oh my God, I've been Trumped, and you're just covered in Marjorie Taylor Greene and Lauren Boebert. If we can't agree that that's not an acceptable place, that it's not actually a debate to go, some people believe that Nancy Pelosi should be killed. Other people believe that Nancy Pelosi should be alive. Who's to decide?
Oh my God. Oh my God.
How can we negotiate a middle ground here? If we can act like that's a debate, then, you know, this democracy thing's a wrap. As I've talked about before, it's a wrap.
It's not only the fact that she got elected, which is already horrific and shocking, but the fact that you're right. Like, Republicans aren't going to say that what you are saying is terrible. You should not say that. Do not do this. Because at the end of the day, like, we're all, like, going down in the ship together.
Mm-hmm.
But for them, it's like, yeah, but I still want to be in first class while I go down.
Yeah, I still want to.
Like, what? Why are you not
fighting?
Why are you not trying to stay alive? I mean, also, if let's say they do expel her, they just get another Republican to take her seat who doesn't believe in aliens. That's all.
Yeah. Well, that's apparently that type of Republican is getting increasingly harder to find, apparently.
Right. The moderate.
Yeah. And I mean, the thing I also want to say to if you are a Republican who listens to our show because you like to hate listen or you whatever, or you're sort of thinking about maybe you've gone too far into the party, I think Republicans have to understand because I've also heard Republicans say this. There's a guy, Scott Jennings, who's on CNN all the time about how we have to get these people out of our party. No. This is your party. This is your party. Until you actually go, you're out, and you can't be in this party, and you don't represent us. This is your party. Trump made this your party.
They were not invited, but they're all in. They trashed your house.
Yep.
And you are not. You either give them the house.
Yes, exactly.
And build a new house, or you ask them to leave forcibly. Yeah. I mean, that's what you're supposed to do. And where were you before?
Yeah. They have made these choices. And they actively made these choices, and they knew what was going to come with these choices, because I don't think they're dumb. I think they're craven. And these are the choices there. And they continue. And even this Marjorie Taylor Greene thing is just another example of how craven they are. They care about power way more than they care about the people, even their own people. I'm here in Dallas. the reason why this state is so mass optional is because the government didn't make a big deal about it. The governor hasn't done his part because he doesn't care. So they're more power over people.
Come on, can I give you some good news?
Sure.
We got Nikki Giovanni on the show. honestly one of the... We've gotten a lot of great guests where I'm like, oh my God, how did we get this guy? Like when we got Bell Hooks, I'm like, yeah, Bell Hooks.
Yeah.
I'm friends with Bell Hooks. Just want to throw
that in. you also did an interview without me, but whatever, it's fine.
But like, you know, when we get guests where you're like, these are people that you don't see in the public space as often. Definitely Nikki Giovanni in the 60s and 70s, you would see her on TV and she was very present and had a really famous interview with James Baldwin. But, like, you don't really see her in the public eye quite so much. And she has a wonderful book that's coming out.
Yep.
And she has to promote it. And she wanted to be on the show.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it was quite an email to get. Would you have any interest in putting Nikki Giovanni on your podcast?
like yes.
Yes. Yes, I have a little bit of interest in that. So, yeah. We accept all legends. Just to put that out into the podcast space, we accept all legends.
I'm super excited, Kamau. I think we should start this interview.
In the late 1960s, Nikki Giovanni was dubbed the poet of the Black Revolution.
She was one of the foremost poets associated with the Black Arts Movement and also wrote influential essays about race and gender.
And for more than 50 years, Nikki Giovanni has kept writing poetry, essays, as well as a number of books for children. Her new collection is Make Me Rain, Poems and Prose.
She's also had a long career teaching writing and literature at Virginia Tech, where she's a university distinguished professor. It was an absolute honor and a lot of fun to get to talk with the legend, Nikki Giovanni. Thank you so much for being on our podcast. It really means the world to us.
Oh, thank you.
The first thing I just wanted to say was I heard your Breakfast Club interview, and in it you said that it was unfortunate that Trump didn't die of COVID and that it wasn't personal.
Now, Ms. Giovanni, I want to make sure I heard you right. You said it's unfortunate that Donald Trump didn't die?
Yes, I thought it was greatly unfortunate. Uh-huh.
You didn't. So you wanted him to pass away?
Well, of course, it would have saved a lot of trouble that's going to come up. If I had been a Jew in Germany, I would have prayed that Hitler died. Of course, you want Trump to die.
And I don't have a question as much as I just want to say thank you. thank you so much, because I think to me the key part is it's not personal. I feel like, because like when we kill children in other countries, when the police just decide to fire at a 12-year-old boy, enter into a house and murder people, it's not personal. It's just business. It's just the way it's poorly done business, but it's just business. So I feel like when we talk about our causes as progressive movements, I think there's something to be said about that. It's not personal. Is business.
It's business.
It also happens to be a little personal, but at the end of the day, it's business. How are we going to get the objective? So I just want to say how much I appreciated that.
Well, thank you. But, you know, 250,000 some odd people have died. So it is strange that he wasn't one of them. Don't you think?
I mean,
No, it is strange.
I shouldn't ask you to agree because you'll get into difficulty with me.
I mean, if they find
we're not icons who can get away with those things yet.
If they find a correlation between having a soul and getting COVID, you know, he sold his a long time ago, so perhaps that might be the cause.
It just disturbed me that somebody goes to the hospital, 250, it's more than that now, I don't really know the number, go to the hospital and die. And he goes, and then the next day, he's out waving at people.
Yeah.
And people who are driving him around die. And I have asked a friend who lives in Washington and works with the government, why is it that nobody has checked the people who clean the White House, the people who clean the toilet, the people who change the bed? Are they still alive? Mm-hmm. And he said, well, how would you know? I said, you'd go and ask the churches, because the people that work in the White House would be church people. They wouldn't let somebody, even if I wanted to, which I don't, they would not let somebody like me work in the White House. If they had, you've seen those signs, we're now hiring. If I went, hi, I'm Nikki Giovanni. I used to write poetry, but I need a job right now. You know, I can make up a bed. Are you kidding? They would look at me and say, we're not letting you near the president. I mean, so how come the people that take care of him, that cook the food, you know, I've always worried about that. Why are we not keeping track of those people who are in fact dying? And those are church people. And I think the church people should be resisting all of that. They should be dealing with the fact that they are losing people, even though we have said, you know, you can't have a lot of people in church. Maybe you can't, but the pastor should know who is alive and who's dead. Mm-hmm. And I just think it's very odd that you work in the White House, and we know they do, and you're gone. And the people that are sleeping on the sheets that you're changing are somehow, well, they're just really healthy. Isn't that wonderful? Mm. Pence is healthy. Well, he did camp, you know, well, yeah, it was positive, but, you know, he got a shot. Everybody got a shot except the people that did the work. I don't understand that. But then they're probably lucky, because if they're like me, they're going to wait and see how many white people get vaccinated and die. And then
So are you waiting? Are you saying you're not going to, if they come to you and say today, like, we've got the vaccine ready and you're in the age group because you're over the age of 60?
I am in the age group. I'm 77 years old. So I have had cancer. I'd say, you know, give it to somebody white and rich. I'm serious. I don't want it. I don't trust it. And I don't trust the people who are giving it, because when did they all of a sudden care about me? I'm a nervous individual. I grew up in segregation. I grew up with a lot of crazy people. So I want to know, why is it that all of a sudden everybody is worried about me? They've never been worried about me. They've never been worried. What's the biggest problem that as a Black woman that I have? Diabetes. Who's helping me with that? What's my other big problem? I need my teeth fixed. We all know that. If your teeth get messed up, then the rest of your body is going to get messed up. We know that. We know that dental work is one of the most important things that happen. Nobody's coming to me and saying, Nikki, you know, we're worried about your teeth, baby. Can we help you? You understand what I'm saying? So why is it all of a sudden a disease that's killing lots of people, and all of a sudden it's like, well, we're really worried about the colored people? I'm not seeing it.
I'll just ask that if they do come to your door and say that you don't want it, can you just send them to my door? I'll take your dose.
Mr. Bell, I would be glad to send it to anybody who wants it.
Well, being a Black woman in America who came up through the civil rights movement and saw everything you saw and met the people you met, you have a right to be nervous. So I don't want to take that away from you. I think Black in America is a nervous position, especially if you live through what you lived through. So I just want to say thank you for being here today. And we can certainly move on vaccine talk.
To whoever listens to your podcast and whatever, I am not recommending anything. You asked me a question about me.
To talk about your philosophy on writing, you know, you've discussed the importance of writing from the heart and from a place of truth. Mm-hmm. Which I think Kamau and I both very strongly believe in. How come there is so much negativity towards the idea of being sincere and earnest? Like, I don't understand why there's such a... It almost feels uncool or like you're trying too hard when you speak from a place, from your heart, from a place of truth. Why is that?
I would have actually no idea on why that is. I do know their songs don't. I know that if we go back, and I, of course, grew up with Detroit was so important to the music. And it go to all of those love songs. And so you're asking a question that I'm going to say, I don't know why some of the novels are not as positive as some of the love songs. Because you look at what did the Temptations or Marvin Gaye, who was having difficulty, or Aretha, what do they do? They sang a love song. And so I think the novels are too. I am very, very fond of a poet and a writer. He does a number of things, named Kwame Alexander. And I had the pleasure of teaching Kwame. And one of the things that he's done is looked at the Black community with love. I like to think that I look at the Black community with love. And so I like to think that some of that I have passed on. I also understand that there are people that want to sell the fact that we are terrible people. And to some degree, we buy it. And I'm sorry about that. I think if you're writing a poem and you have something to say, say it. But I also think if you have something good to say, think about it. I love the blues, by the way. And I've always keep pointing out that the blues is about history. It's not about sadness. It's about history. It tells the story of who we are. I was just listening on my way here. I was just listening to Dexter Gordon. They are not putting lyrics, but they have notes that are telling a story. And we have words that are doing the same thing. So we have to decide. We have to make a decision. And I remember, and I just have to say this one thing. I remember Monk, because when Monk started, Thelonious Monk, nobody understood Monk, because very few people understand genius anyway. And somebody said to Monk, you know, you're playing all the wrong notes. And Monk just looked at him and said, the piano ain't got no wrong notes. And I have always loved him for that. I say that to my students, that Thelonious Monk reminds us that the piano ain't got no wrong notes, which means that the poem doesn't have wrong words. They're just in the wrong place. So you have to decide what is the tune that you want to make out of that.
One of the things you've talked about is that a writer's right to contradict themselves over time, which I think is really important. And I think that I've heard other people talk about that too, but I think it's important for someone like you, who is so highly respected, to say, we should be able to look back on our work and say, oh, I don't think that way anymore. Or that was one moment in time that I felt a certain way, but I don't feel that way. But now we live in a culture where people will go back and find what you said before and go, look what you said. We're going to cancel you today for what you did before. Or we're not going to put that in its proper context. We're going to get rid of you now because of what you said before. What do you think about this current moment where we're always going through looking for contradiction as a way to attack people?
Fine by me. I don't know you. I don't mean you, Mr. Bell. I mean, whoever's doing that, who's ever running through the computer or whatever they're doing, I don't give a damn what you think. My job is to do what I believe in. So what I could say and understand at 25, for example, someone just wrote me and they said, oh, we found a poem. I just got the email. And they said, oh, I just found this book, this poem in this book. And, you know, you were 25 years old. And I'm thinking, and you what? Blow your nose on it. I'm 77 years old. If I haven't changed in, what is that, 50 something odd years, 52 years or something? If I haven't changed, something's wrong with one of us. Now, we can pick who. I'm going to pick you. I think there's nothing wrong with me. And I think that writers have to know that we have to continue, especially poets, because we write short things. Novelists, you know, a novelist might write, you know, two novels, or maybe, you know, if they're lucky, three, unless they do the, you know, Agatha Christie, that kind of thing, then they just do the same thing over and over and over again. But poets write a lot. We have a lot to say. And when we do, that means that we will have learned something. We will have learned something from you. Martin Luther King, remember when he got out of jail, out of the Birmingham jail, you remember, where did he go? He went to India. Why? Because he wanted to learn what it was, the salt march. He wanted to learn. So he went to India. And I'm saying, you have to learn something. And somebody would have said at that point, you know, well, why you got to go to India? You can stay here. But no, you have to learn something. And I'm sorry that Martin was assassinated, because I would like to think that had he been able to be 77 years old, he would have learned a few other things too. The girls have learned, I say the girls, that's just because I'm 77, but Black Lives Matter, those young women have put together another level of learning something. And all things being equal, there would have been people who complained about it. The Black Panthers would have complained. Somebody would have complained that they don't know what they're doing, because that's what people do. And those young ladies know what they were doing. They knew what they wanted to do, and they went to do it. They didn't need to go to India to find out what it is they needed to do. They had learned something. Am I making sense?
Yeah, no, absolutely.
And I think it was good for Martin to go, but I think it was also good for the girls to put together actually an international movement. I think everybody should be very, very proud of them, because Black lives do matter.
You talk, I think, in the New York Times article about the pride you have for this new generation, for young people, and kind of the importance of stepping aside while telling them that you're proud of them, which I think is a novel take, because I really do believe as you get older, there's this immediate belief that I have more wisdom, I know the best way to do things, and to have the wisdom to actually say, I might not have all your answers and I'm going to support you, means a lot. And it made me think a lot about your discussions with James Baldwin, which I think a lot of us have seen.
I think that the only thing that's changed in the last, since Martin Luther King, since 54, I think the only thing that's really changed is the Black woman. And what she
said... No, I don't think she's changed. I think she's become more visible.
I think she's changed. Because there was a time, let's say my mother, you know what I mean, my aunts and things like that, they would say, okay, if that's the way you establish your manhood, mm-hmm. I'm going to go for it.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
my generation says, hey, mm-hmm. no good.
Okay.
You must
okay.
establish
I'll
a
agree.
New base.
I'll agree with
and,
that.
And we are, as a group, demanding that a new base be established.
Yeah, but be careful as a woman what you demand of a man.
I demand that he be a man.
Yeah, but you can't
because
say,
the provision part.
Yeah, but you can't say you demand it. You have to suggest it.
Well, that's your ego that says that. No, I demand it. Now you deal with that.
All right. Okay.
I demand.
I'll even go with that.
I demand that you be a man, and I don't think that's asking too much. Because if I wanted a provision, you know, I would get a camper. You know what
mm-hmm,
I mean?
Mm-hmm,
I would
mm-hmm.
get a camper that provides things. You know what I mean? You get an army surplus kit
mm-hmm.
that provides
mm-hmm.
things. I need a man.
And what I love is he disagrees at times with you, but there's such a respect for your intellectual, vigor. There is such a respect to your ideas. There are times where he concedes points because you're like, he's listening to you. And the boundary of age at that point is doesn't seem like it's in the way. Did that impact how you view your current place in this movement? Artistically and politically, those interactions with James Baldwin and people like James Baldwin who are older, who did seem to step aside, who did show you that respect, is that a reason you feel the way you feel today?
I hadn't thought about it that way, but you learn from your elders, of course, or I would hope that you do. But talking with Jimmy was an honor and a privilege, and I certainly enjoyed it. And I recently did a interview with Rhapsody. And so it's really funny because I was 20 years younger than Jimmy, and Rhapsody is 20 years younger than I am.
Wow.
And so it was like, okay, we're all climbing this ladder. And so I was very pleased to be able to work with the younger generation. I've been doing a little work with Beyonce, and I'm really thrilled to be able to recognize that she's read me and that she appreciates my work, you know, because you always want to do that. But the only thing that I can tell you that I know that I definitely do better than most people, especially most young people, is fried chicken. I do. I make the best fried chicken because I do it in butter. But you know, yeah, you have to admit what you do. So when everybody's tired and they want to come home, and they want to rest, you know, they just have to call me up and I'll put the chicken on. Because now I'm an old lady and that's what I'm supposed to be doing. Mm. I'm supposed to be taking care as much as I can of the young people. That's my job now.
One of the things that it feels so strange about it is that it feels like you guys could have taped that today. You know, you sort of switch some of the names around, but it's all the content about where Black people are, how we're still sort of processing our Blackness, how we're dealing with white supremacy, all feels very current. Is it frustrating that some of these conversations still haven't changed and we're still working through the same stuff?
It's frustrating to me that we are still, and I mean no disrespect, that we're still using the term white supremacy, because it's actually white cowardness, and it's time that we use that word.
I'm happy to get an update.
It's just like what we see of what they're doing, as Donald Trump and all those fools that are following him, is cowardness. And what we're seeing are the Nazis trying to make a comeback because they recognize that they are useless, that they wake up in the morning and they have nothing to show for life. If God was standing in front of them and said, well, what have you done? What can you show me? They'd have said, I'm white. That's all they have to show for their life. I am white. There has to be something more to life than the color of their skin. And I think that we cannot respect it. We have to recognize Donald Trump, as we know, is a coward and a bully. And the people following him are cowards and bullies, which is why, again, it's so wonderful to see the younger generation and the fight that they are winning with the vote. It's a question of who is going to try to save what is left of the United States. And I'm not sure that any of it. I laugh about it, and I say it all the time. Speaking of God, I happen to be a Christian. Some of you aren't. It doesn't matter. I'm not trying to. But if God, you know, if the phone rang now, and I picked it up and said, Nick, it's God. You know, I just have a question. I'd have to tell you all, wait a minute, it's God, because you'd have to wait. And I said, what can I do for you, God? And, you know, do you think I should keep the United States? I would have to say no. No, I don't think that there's anything that is worth keeping here. I would have to say, you know, yeah, well, you tried. You and Jesus did your best. And we and you go, because we have become a worthless nation.
One thing that I think comedians and poets have in common is our use of language. The fact that we're good with the economy of language. We use few words to say as much as we can say powerfully. Yet it feels like both stand-up comedy and poetry get disrespected. And I think part of that has to do with the fact that we use fewer words because we talk in a way that might be accessible to the masses. Does that ever frustrate you? Have you felt that during your journey as a poet, that somehow poetry doesn't get the respect, especially now that it should get?
I hate to say this because this is arrogant, but I think that I am loved by the people who love me. I'm sorry, I really do. And if we were traveling, which I'm not, I haven't been traveling, as I say, since March because of this virus, but I would walk into a room and people will not just clap because that's something that's easy enough to do, but people will hug me. People will say, I read your poem when I was in the eighth. No, I think that I get the respect that I have earned. And there are some people that don't like me because I just went through a whole thing and called the president, you know, a traitor and stuff. So some people won't like that. And as I point out all the time, of course, the door, wherever I am, other than my home, the door is open. So if you come and I'm reading poetry and you don't like it, you know, I'm not going to try to keep you. I'm not the person that's going to say, you know, you can't take it. I watch comedians respond to people who have walked out on them. People walk out on you because they can't take it. Well, you're not interested. Who cares what those people think? What you care about is the people who are staying with you. That's what I have never misunderstood my audience. And I still don't. That's just not something I misunderstand. The people who stay are the people I'm talking with. And that's not to, and that's not at. My preposition is with. And I am talking with my people. And we are enjoying each other. And every now and then they let me sing And so it's like, I'm going to sing a song now. And he came back, oh, no, Nikki, you can't sing. But I enjoy it. And that's what we do. I enjoy being with my audience. And I want my audience, and I hope my audience enjoys. Well, if they don't, as I say again, the door is open.
The door that got you in here can take you out of here. Is that it?
Yeah, and I'm not going to try to stop you, and I'm not going to try to embarrass you. You know, it's, I can understand I'm not everybody's cup of tea.
Yeah.
And if you thought you were going to hear, you know, one thing and it was another and you said, oh, I don't want to be bothered with this. I understand. And you can go on because I still want to talk with the people who are sitting there saying, okay, let me see where she's going now.
The comedian I think of when I think about a comedian who berates people as they leave is Paul Mooney. I think and Ari both opened for Paul Mooney. And Paul Paul will tell people, I remember Paul would tell people who sat down, oh, that you're going to leave soon, and sort of predict that they were going to leave, and then basically escort them out the door when they finally had enough. Of course, usually those are white people.
Sincerely, not always.
No.
They're not, you know, that's not a thing of color. But I don't think it's my job to berate someone who doesn't want to be bothered with me. I think it's my job to talk with the people who do.
We always want to hear your reactions to what you hear on Politically Reacted, but right now we're asking for a particular kind of reaction.
A negative reaction. We want to know when you think we've gotten it wrong, when we've screwed up, when we've screwed the pooch, when we jumped the shark, we shit ourselves.
Oh, well, we're going to get reactions about our negative reactions. Yep, we're planning a special episode where we will respond to the listeners who pointed out where we've already blown it this season of Politically Reactive. Leave us a voicemail at 917-477-6525. That's 917-477-6525.
Or email us at info@politicallyreactive.com. That's info@politicallyreactive.com.
Unless, of course, you just can't imagine us being wrong.
And if that's the case, please review the show on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. Your blind faith in us really does make a difference. My favorite Nikki Giovanni poem is quoting the Black Eyed Pea, "We're Going to Mars."
We're going to Mars for the same reason Marco Polo rocketed to China. For the same reason Columbus trimmed his sails on a dream of spices. For the very same reason Shackleton was enchanted with penguins. For the reason we fall in love. It's the only adventure.
It's an incredible poem comparing the journey to Mars to the Middle Passage that brought enslaved Africans to North America.
Mars is 1 year of travel to get there, plus 1 year of living on Mars, plus 1 year to return to Earth. Equals 3 years of Earthlings being in a tight space, going to an unknown place with an unsure welcome awaiting them. Tired muscles, unknown and unusual foods, harsh conditions, and no known landmarks to keep them human. Only a hope and a prayer that they will be shadowed beneath a benign hand. And there is no historical precedent for that except this. The trip to Mars can only be understood through Black Americans, I say. The trip to Mars can only be understood through Black Americans. The people who were captured and enslaved immediately recognized the men who came, who chained and whipped them and herded them into ships so tightly packed there was no room to turn, no privacy to respect, no tears to fall without landing on another. We're not kind and gentle and concerned for the state of their souls, no. The men with whips and chains were understood to be killers, feared to be cannibals, known to be sexual predators. The captured knew they were in trouble in an unknown place without communicable abilities with a violent and capricious species. But they could look out and still see signs of home. They could still smell the sweetness in the air. They could see the clouds floating above the land they loved. But there reached a point when the captured could not only not look back, they had no idea which way back might be. There was nothing in the middle of the deep blue water to indicate which way home might be. And it was that moment when a decision had to be made. Do they continue forward with a resolve to see this thing through, or do they embrace the waters and find another world?
The uncertainty, the fear, the unknown, and all the experiences that an astronaut would have to face is something that Black Americans can relate to. So NASA should contact Black people if they want to know what this experience is going to be. And I love that poem. And I had two questions, because Mars comes up again in your poems that have just been released. So my first question is, how come Mars reoccurs? What is it about Mars that is a point that comes back to you?
Oh, it's our sister planet. And I like space, and so I'm always doing that. And as I said earlier, I'm a Christian. And one of the things, you know, Jesus, on that third day, Jesus, when they went to the tomb, he was not there. And I'm thinking, well, where did he go? And I thought, well, he went to Mars. He's, to hell with these people. They don't deserve me. So there was a little note, bye, gone to Mars. And and I just like the idea that there's a planet someplace that welcomes people, that has corrected our mistakes. I like space. And in liking space, you have to like the spirit. And one of the things, Dr. Bolden, and I have a photograph of Bolden right on this desk. I keep it right there. He's a great guy. I wanted him on the Supreme Court. When Scalia died, I wrote a letter to the editor, and they published it, but it didn't change anything. They say that I think that Charles Bolden, the astronaut, should be on the Supreme Court, because if this is Mother Earth, then only the astronauts have been born. The rest of us are still here. We are still in the womb. We are still not being born. And I would say to him, you know, I think I should go to Mars. And he said, well, Nick, we can't send you to Mars. And I said, well, why not? And he said, well, we can send you to the International Space Station, but we can't bring you back. And I'd say, Charles, why? He said, because, I had cancer, and I had my left lung was removed. And he said, well, it's not a secret or something. And he said, when we bring you back into gravity, your organs will move around and it will kill you. And I said, Charles, I don't know how to tell you this, but one day I'm going to die. I don't want it soon, you know, but one day I'm going to die. So I would just as soon send me into space. And when that moment comes, open the door and I'll just be a star. And some little girl or some little boy will sit and watch me and say, oh, there goes Nikki, and start to dream about our galaxy. I would love to see, especially Black youngsters, thinking beyond. And I mean, I'm not taking any other youngsters away, sure, but Black youngsters especially need to take the experience of our ancestors. If we can survive Middle Passage, come to what is going to become the United States, and recreate or create a nation, then we can survive space. We are the people who should go into space. Now we know, because we know from John Glenn, I'm an Ohioan, I grew up in Ohio. I was born in Tennessee, but I grew up now. We know from John Glenn that in his first trip into space, it was three Black women who did the mathematics that said that ship can go. And when they said to Mr. Glenn, you know, we're ready, Colonel Glenn, we're ready, you can go, what he had to say to them was, and I will quote that, what did the girls say? Because he called them, but it wasn't a negative. He called, what did the girls say? And they went back and said, they said, and these are Black women, it's safe. And he said, I'll go. And I think it's so wonderful, because I think of the whole planet as, what do the girls say? Mm. And now the girls are saying, Black lives matter. I'm not going to live forever, but I just enjoy, I hope I live long enough to see what the girls say next, because it's a fabulous thing to be a Black woman. And what Black women have continually done is to build and build and build. So I'm excited about that.
In the poem, you're very almost optimistic about the idea of going to Mars. The idea it's a life seeking thing. The idea that it's what brought all the great explorers. And I feel like for me, I share more of kind of Gil Scott Heron's thought on it. You know, when he talks about Whitey on the Moon.
Taxes taking my whole damn check. The junkies make me a nervous wreck. The price of food is going up. And as if all that crap wasn't enough, a rat done bit my sister Nell with Whitey on the moon. Her face and arms began to swell, and Whitey's on the moon.
My thought is, like, why are we going to the moon when there's so much to be done here? How come we're abandoning the problems of the earth? And I think my second thought is, you know, if thinking about colonialism or any type of travel, it always had to do with a privileged class exploiting, and you know, I'm sure there's going to be you know, it's going to do with capitalism. There's going to be a fight for the naming rights of Mars, and I'm sure the candy bar company is going to fight as all hell for it. To me, it just, I can't take the system out. So when you were writing the poem, is it this genuine positivity, like there is something to shoot for when it comes to Mars, or was that like a concession in the poem in order to make the more important analogy to the Middle Passage?
That's funny. First of all, I knew Gil, and drugs are a bad idea. So,
oh, jeez.
That is so much better than just say no. It's such a better slogan. Wow.
A lot of things that he's going to think are going to be negative things because he's allowed a negativity into his body. Hmm. And I'm sorry about that. I was sorry about Gil. I was sorry about his death. He was too young. I think, again, I am on this one, I'm optimistic. And probably you're right. Probably Mars candy bar might. I hadn't thought about that. And looking at Mars as our sister planet, we know that it has made mistakes. And when I was growing up, now I'm older than both of you, but when I was growing up, Mars was the red planet. And if you looked at it, you can go back. If you looked at it through your telescope that showed, you know, go back, you will see that Mars is burning up. And I always thought that Mars was burning up because it had wars. If one nuclear weapon goes off, they're all going off and Earth will burn. That being the case, Mars is now ready to accept the fact that, oh, we made a mistake. And so I just think, wouldn't it be a great idea to go to Mars? But again, you got to have Black people landing, and we look at things differently. And I think it'd be a lot of fun, you know, send me up there and we'll have a little city, the Nikki, and people will come and say, well, what does it cost to spend the night here? It's free, you know.
It's funny. I don't know if I'll make it to Mars, but I do think that one of the things I thought about a lot and I've always been fascinated with is African-American thought leaders and artists who decide to move out of the country at some point, decide that their work has to be done somewhere else. I think about James Baldwin. I think about Nina Simone. Think about Josephine Baker. And so, as you say right now, you said if you got that phone call from God and you say, what should we do with America? You'd be like, I think we're, you know, I don't know, you throw it in the trash. I don't know how you said it. But and I've thought about that a lot in 2020, that, like, I don't know that this America experiment is savable or salvageable. And I've thought about started looking into other countries to move my family to. And one of the things people say is like, well, you know, there's racism everywhere. I was like, yeah, I get that. but there's a certain American context of racism that I feel like I'm done with. Have you ever thought about moving out of this country, moving somewhere else?
No, never. The most I have moved was from the South, from Tennessee to Southern Ohio to New York to back to Southern Ohio. Now I'm in Virginia. But no, I never did. I'm of another generation. And I think Jimmy and I talked about, and he was saying, you know, that he couldn't handle it. But Jimmy had a lot of issues at a different time. You didn't mention one of my favorite people who's a wonderful man, Chester Himes. And Chester went all over. And I think that generation did the right thing. They needed to get away to see something else. A lot of my poetry, or quite a bit of my poetry, talks about those who stayed. And I think that we have to admire those who stayed because they built the churches, they built the communities, they built the buildings. And I found myself the other night, I'm a football fan, of course, and I was watching Oklahoma. And you can't look at Oklahoma without realizing that all of those white people, those cowards, came in to destroy Tulsa, Oklahoma, because they were jealous, because they could not have built what was then called the Black Wall Street. And so I couldn't cheer for Oklahoma. I know I should be better. I know if Jesus were here, he'd say, well, try to love them. No, no, I was cheering against them. This was a long answer to the question. Could you move to Oklahoma? No. Would you go? No, I couldn't. Would you go to see that play, Oklahoma, where everybody thought, you know, with the Surrey, with the fringe on top? That's not what was on top. What was on top was some black people dying. What it was is that the blood of black people finally melted into the oil that white people wanted to use. And they ought to think about that. Every time somebody pumps some oil out, they ought to think about the death of those people.
Mm. We're just taking it in. You're someone who, in so many ways, has kept yourself in the loop with, obviously, political and artistic movements. So first question is, I know you have a Thug Life tattoo. Yes. So I wanted to know, what was it about Tupac and his philosophy of Thug Life that meant something to you, as well as, you know, why you would tattoo it on yourself? And secondly, today, who impresses you, Nikki Giovanni, as an artist and an activist today?
Well, of course, Pac was only 1 year younger than my son. And the death of him, the death of any, in no mother, I'll speak as a mother, no mother wants to bury her child. Your mothers don't want to bury you. You probably don't want to bury your mother, but it's a lot better than she has to bury you. I only have one tattoo, and it is Thug Life, because I wanted Afeni Shakur to know that somebody mourned with her. Now, of course, a lot of people have tattoos, but at that point, a lot of people didn't. And I didn't know that she would know, but it's the saddest thing to think about putting your child in the ground. It's just, I'm sorry, see, you brought tears to my eyes. We don't want that. That is not something that we want. So that's why I did it. Pac was a great man, and he remains a great man. We still remember, we're still talking about Tupac. We've lost a lot of those other fools. And of course, somebody, what's his name? Kanye West needs to be hospitalized because he's crazy. and Ice Cube needs to be put away because he's a fool. Because, you know, that's true. But Pac was a man, and he stood up and he showed people how to be men. He showed the men, the boys, this is how you do it. And I think we all love Pac. I think, and I think we always will. Pac will be with us, like Jimmy was with us. Like, there's so many people who are still with us who will always be with us because they were good people. Pac was a good person. And I think that we were very fortunate to have him as long as we did. Like everybody, I'm so proud to be in the same generation of Colin Kaepernick, mm-hmm. that he stood on the shoulders, as we know, of Muhammad Ali. And Ali was a friend of mine. So I am very proud to see that. And I was very proud to see that what Colin did also, and it was a sacrifice. He sacrificed his career, but it also showed the athletes, this is our voice. And I saw that, I think it was Sports Illustrated has LeBron James as the sports person of the year. And I'm very proud of LeBron because he was like a lot of young men. And then he's matured and matured and matured, and he's recognized his power. And I think that's incredibly wonderful that the athletes have been of service to our people as we have been of service to the athletes. I am concerned, if you wanted the truth about it, it's none of my business, about the singers right now, because I don't see that the singers are keeping up with the athletes. I think that a lot of the music that I hear that's supposed to be modern is really just stupid. And it's the best music. It still goes back right now, actually, to Detroit, to rhythm and blues. And that's about it. Nothing has come. The rappers have other than Pac, that's why we're still talking about him. That group has let us down. They really, you know, somebody waved a dollar bill in front of their face and it was like, oh, that's important. And they ran out to get that. And I think that's sad. I think the rappers could have done better. You know, it's just me, but they say, you know, Nikki's old lady and she, you know, she's done what she did. And so they're right. I mean, I'm not, I'm not trying to tell them what to do, but there is another voice coming. And so we're watching the athletes, and we're not watching that they are taking that next step. So we know that there's somebody, there's going to be a rhythm to that voice that's going to create a song that we will all sing.
Nikki, first of all, it's very difficult to call you Nikki as opposed to Professor Giovanni, I'll be honest with you, just because I feel like I learned so much, and the idea of just calling you Nikki is a little overwhelming. But thank you so much for being on our podcast. It means a lot to both of us. Thank you.
Oh, thank you. It means a lot to me. It's nice to talk to you young people. And the reason I enjoy still teaching, and I guess one day I said to my students, you know, now if I ever just fall down, you know, I'm teaching, and if I ever in the middle of saying something just fall out, just call, you know, 911 because I'm gone. You know, I understand. I wrote a poem in my new book, and I said, you'll know that I'm dead. And my attorney is named Gloria. She's married to Mike, and I love her. I've known her longer than me. If Gloria brings oysters, because I really like Kamamata oysters, and Gloria will bring oysters and hold them close to my nose, if I don't sit up and eat the oysters, then you know I'm gone. So
after that. No, well, let's hope that's a long time off, because I'm still hoping to have some of that fried chicken someday.
Oh, come on. Come anytime. It's good. And I thank you for inviting me. And as I said, I think the younger generation, very, very much I thank you for talking to me, because otherwise you end up, you're sitting out there by yourself. Hmm. And I like you all. I like, and I'm not that much older than both of you, but I am older. And there are youngsters coming up, and I get to talk to them, and they get to take photographs of me, they get to do things. And it's really nice to know there's an old song, I'm sure we all know it. We are climbing Jacob's ladder. Every round goes higher and higher. I say you might not know it, Harry, because you're not a Black American. It's an old spiritual.
Yeah, I do know it.
Every round, yeah, but every round. And we are seeing that. And that's what makes it fun. It's a good idea to be alive. And I certainly recommend it. If anybody's, you know, whatever you're doing, be alive. Mm. Every round goes higher and higher.
Amazing.
Thank you so much. It's been an extreme honor. We really appreciate it. And love to have you back anytime. You don't have to be promoting a book. You can just come by and talk to us.
Thank you. Thank you.
Nikki Giovanni is a distinguished university professor at Virginia Tech University, and she's the author of more than 24 books.
Her latest collection is Make Me Rain, Poems and Prose.
That's it for this week. Big thanks to the legend, Nikki Giovanni. It was truly an honor.
And remember, we always want to hear from you. And now we're even encouraging you to tell us when we've been wrong.
Leave us a voicemail at 917-477-6525.
That's 917-477-6525. Or email us at info@politicallyreactive.com.
And keep your comments and questions coming on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram with the hashtag PoliticallyReactive.
Rate and review the show wherever you get your podcasts. And when there's an episode you love, share it with everybody.
As we talked about in the intro, we need to get Marjorie Taylor Greene out of the Congress. There's many ways you can participate in doing this. You can go to house.gov and find your congressperson to talk to them. March for Our Lives, NAACP, Move On, Change.org, Women's March. Everybody wants her gone.
Everybody. It's the only thing we're united in on the left. We must remove this human being.
Politically Reactive is a production of Topic Studios and Warner Media Podcast Network. Executive producers are Maria Zuckerman and Christy Gressman.
And my dear friend, W. Kamau Bell.
And my associate, Harry Kundabolu.
Associate? Associate? At least you didn't call me an acquaintance. Right. The show is produced by Matt Martin, Malachi Seeger, Sakir, and Kelly Rafferty. Will Stanton engineers and mixes the show.
And thanks, as always, to Brontez Purnell for providing music for the show. Thanks for listening to Politically Reactive.
Next time you're on CNN on doing a talking head thing, try to throw in Continental News Network and see what happens.
Look, as someone who works for the Continental News Network,
Like, would they even catch you? Would Don Lemon be like, that's not what it should... Like, would they even... be like, I don't know. I guess that's what it's for.
Don, you and me both work for the Continental News Network. And,
When you work next level. When you play next level. And when it's time to sleep, Sleep Number smart beds are designed to embrace your uniqueness, providing you with high-quality sleep every night. Sleep next level. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, the Queen Sleep Number C4 smart bed is only $1,599. Save $300 for a limited time, only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com. Prices higher in Alaska and Hawaii.